Well, good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome, dear listeners. Obviously, as you heard David just exiting out there, specifically with, well, unintentionally handing over to Ondangwa. Well, I'm still standing over here in the Windhoek scenario, or from the Windhoek perspective. But once again, welcoming you on this chilly Saturday. Well, on this chilly Monday morning, obviously, as we're looking into the last straight of what is the month of May, obviously, with just this week still left of the month, and obviously also providing us in this, on this holiday of Africa Day, the necessary particular sort of like insight for this morning's unpacking the day. You're still in my company from 8 a.m. up until 10 a.m., obviously, as we always do the business in terms of dissecting major talking points, looking at the not so obvious particular discussion or talking points that would come about from it. Now, before we actually start off, this just starting off on an interesting particular note, something, you know, obviously completely unrelated to the show, but rather related to the day of Africa Day. You know, as an interesting side note, I've actually, when this morning, you know, when I got up and specifically I looked through some of the particular major talking points, obviously with Trump in Iran, them supposedly reaching some sort of a peace deal. I don't know if it's a ceasefire or an actual peace deal. I still have to go and read formally, and ultimately we still, you know, I'm on my side, I'm still sort of like observing the situation, because Trump is known for saying one thing and actually doing something completely different. And then when he was, and then if he's asked in terms of why did you say, do the opposite of what you said, then he would deny that he actually said it and run full steam by, you know, supporting said particular action that obviously transpired. So the man is a serial liar. I'll be honest with you. I've never seen a situation like that. Even back in his first term, there was something to him. And then since last year into this year, his own stories just don't hold up any water. So if you're one of those few Namibians who believe in the man, go with God. I do hope that you go with God. But the actual message that I had to get to was that this morning, besides hearing about the supposed US-Iran negotiations and supposedly the gains they've made, in between, the African Union issued a video statement. I think that's the African Union's like a deputy chief, this gentleman. I continuously forget this gentleman's name, but it was a very good message, to be honest. And it was a message primarily that looked at what this day particularly means and how we should, as fellow Africans, look at the particular day of Africa Day. And it's particular sort of like the developments that obviously have come through. Yes, it's the African Union Commission chairperson who actually spoke earlier this morning. I'm obviously just not going to play his video, but specifically just looking for his name, because the man he's not always at the forefront. You see him do a speech whenever we observe the AU developments. That's now Helmut and myself. But in some scenarios, he is in the room at the big table with the heads of state, but then I think he has to run like the, you know, the directorates and the subdivisions of the AU specifically, and ensure that those particular things are running smoothly. So the current AU head, the current AU Commission chairperson is Mahmoud Ali Yusuf. He is the CEO, legal representative, and chief accounting officer for the African Union. So think of him as a, and he's from Djibouti, and think of him as a executive director in our ministries, you know, and he's on that particular scale. Obviously, this is continental, so it's a bit broader. But the message in earnest was one about recognizing who we are, and I'm just conveying that same message to you guys. Take pride in that you're an African. Don't feel ashamed that you're an African, probably feel ashamed, you know, if you're lacking a few services like running water and electricity, or like what Windhoek had been suffering from, whereas some of us had been seeing, you know, the water situation and hearing of the water situation, specifically with the so-called body, with the body that was, or the person discovered in the water back in last week. It was news to me. I was like, what? And yeah, so just so that you guys know, this is obviously, you know, it's a few blemishes. I mean, they come and they go. But take pride in being an African. Take pride in specifically who you are. Take pride in the community that you're based in, that you're installed within. Take pride specifically in the family, who it forms part of the community. Because if you start from the individual, you go to the household. From the household, you then go to the broader community sense. Take pride in every level of where you find yourself. And obviously take pride in the small strides that you make. You might not be driving the Mercedes-Benz. You might not be living in the mansion here in Klein Windhoek. Well, in many cases, there are a few mansions around here, yeah. But if you're not living there, it doesn't mean you shouldn't take pride in yourself. Taking pride in being an African, being a Namibian, is not a scenario of looking at the particular wealth, because we know we have the wealth, we know we have the resources, we know we have the potential. And actually, it is what our conversation for this morning's unpacking will be leading us into, because it'll be about, you know, how to unlock some of the latent potentials for us to actually participate broader in the green industries development, or the green industries across Namibia. Now, starting in earnest with this morning's conversation, this is based upon the article that our colleague, who just exited from the early morning scoop, that being David, he wrote the article in the recent edition of the Villager e-paper, specifically the article about the heading, or as it's known as, the particular title is known as the education revamp that is needed to fill the green hydrogen skills gaps, or skills gap that exists in the Namibian landscape. Now, it is no doubt that much of the, which is now, as it is now fully coined and fully identified now, the whole, the sectors where in green hydrogen and its affiliate affiliate economic developments are taking place, it is now fully coined as the green industries in Namibia, or the green industry sector, which is inapplicable, and I fully agree with that label. And it obviously also speaks towards the economic potential that is still under development and taking place. Now, many of you probably would have been asking, right now, when are we actually seeing the things? Well, the things actually have been happening already. They just have to be ramped up. And if you've seen some of the other particular articles that we've also written about the overall green industries discussion, for example, the Power to X article that I wrote a little bit earlier, I think that was back in March. Yeah, that was back in March. And then there was also the other developments in and around the hydrogen, you know, the hydrogen unveiling and so forth and so forth. And the green steel manufacturing taking place, the recent articles from the EU Namibia Business Forum, much of it also highlighted some key talking points that obviously stem from developments there, how you need to look at Namibia's role specifically, like in the Great Green Deal of the EU, which then gives basis for the Global Gateway mechanism. The Global Gateway mechanism is that particular new ambition of reaching a healthier planet, of ensuring a healthier planet with a healthier future for most of humanity. It is obviously cemented within the Samoa Agreement, just so that I give you the rundown of those particular elements, and it aims to position a healthier Africa, having moved away from the black gold, that being oil, having moved away from much of the other particular carbon-intensive mechanisms and developments, and thus trying to steer areas like the Caribbean, Africa, and the Pacific Islands into a new dawn, a dawn where petrol and gas don't feature as the major energy sources in the economies of said particular countries. Now, with that said, with that being identified, with that lowdown being given to you, David obviously also recently attended the recent Green Hydrogen Monitor, which is the fifth installation that was hosted by the Institute for Public Policy Research, IPPR. I was invited, but we've got an in-house policy here at Eagle FM specifically. Not all of us can show up at the same particular event. So David went, well, I wanted to go somewhere else, but I was a bit late at the other particular event. Obviously, in interacting with you guys, and having that conversation going through. So the core subject matter that emanates from the article that David supplied in the recent the Villager e-paper was the one about the skills gap and skills that would be needed. This obviously coming out from the presentation that happened back on Thursday last week, and it was a notion specifically of how quickly can we get the skills into these particular developments, these green industries developments that are happening across Namibia, and how quickly can we start with the production, obviously, that would be needed. Another particular thing that you also need to look at, if you've never truly grasped or understood what we're dealing with, what we're talking about, this is not an extraction mechanism. This is not a mine. This is not a fishing vessel. There's not even an agriculture. Okay, there is one agricultural project, obviously, but it's not even in the sense of saying, let's get all Namibians working in that particular sector as well, because it's not. The unfortunate thing is we will still need people doing customer service in many parts of the economy. We will still need people doing, being the nurses, being the doctors, being the engineers in other fields and other particular specific zones of our economy. We will still need people working as town planners. We will still need people working as teachers. We will still need people doing their jobs as media professionals like myself. We will still need people being the mechanics. We will still need people doing all manner of other particular, value contributing activities across the Namibian economy, so that we've got that balance in terms of said particular skills being positioned everywhere and the needs being met through the qualified Namibians that we are producing. Now, there are like 3 points that come through from the article that David wrote. The first one is obviously the necessary skilled Namibians to be positioned close to the various green industry production, installations across the country. These are obviously the first two phases, which are the major, the two phases primarily being, that are greatly in development. That's obviously the guys in the south, and it's the guys at the Walvis Bay, Swakopmund, scenario there. And they obviously will need people. But then the article that I wrote about the Power to X throws a whole new curveball into this equation. It throws a whole new variable into this whole discussion. Now, if you don't know what the Power to X still is in 2026, the Power to X principle governs the potential to basically replace all petrochemicals that are manufactured in the world with the green chemicals or the green products that can be made specifically from the green ammonia to be produced, as well as also the green hydrogen that to be produced from the various phases and installations in Namibia. The presentations that I observed and witnessed, obviously, at the UNAM conference for the Power to X engagement, greatly opened my eyes to this. But I've already known about the Power to X potential. It was explained to when I was also part of a one day workshop for media professionals to understand the overall green industry discussion or the overall green hydrogen developments taking place in Namibia and across the world. And the facilitator that was used is a physicist, Dr. von Urzen. Yeah, Dr. von Urzen. He's from Swakopmund. So the physicist explained to us, So we go through all the particular things, and then he explains to us towards the end of the discussion, towards the end of the training, we have this concept of the Power to X. And I went and looked at the Power to X in its entirety. I went and looked at it. What is this thing? Because we were only told up until a certain part about green hydrogen and what this basically means. So you then had to go read up about green hydrogen and understand green hydrogen and its extensive applications. But the extensive applications at that stage of the first presentations that we obviously had to see, not the one with the workshop, the one prior to that workshop, was that don't factor, it didn't say anything yet about the Power to X principle. And the Power to X principle was something already, for example, that the EU had already identified back, and I'm talking about way back, before COVID, before 2020, that this is the new particular, what do they call that thing? This is supposed to be the new trend I almost said biological fuels or biofuels, but it's sort of like saying this is the new scope in terms of achieving or replacing our great dependence on specifically petroleum products in the world. So this is everything from the plastics we produce to much of the chemicals that we produce to some of the particular fuels, obviously. The aim is obviously to achieve some of the fuels first and for the fuels to be used for the new kinds of engines that are to be developed that to run on green hydrogen and green hydrogen products like the green ammonia. But you start getting things like the fuels, the presentation of the fuels that would take place. Now, from what I could see from the article, the Power to X principle was not exhausted. I'm telling you guys, if you want to get me excited, you get me talking about this particular subject matter. It's not that I'm promoting this particular subject matter, it's just I enjoy it. Primarily because it is a subject matter that, for all intended purposes, not in one level does it actually, espouse anything negative to the environment. Nothing. It doesn't even tell you to stop farming. It doesn't even tell you to stop farming. Its applications can impact heating and cooling solutions for the modern household. Its applications can impact mobility, meaning the mobility that a city like Windhoek would need greatly. It impacts the steel manufacturing, because steel, like copper, is used everywhere. It impacts the fertilizer industry, because fertilizer, like we've now seen, is that there's a few countries that are this close to basically collapsing because they don't have access to the fertilizer coming through from the oil-producing countries that now were in a fight, in a slugfest with each other, there in the Middle East, in the Strait of Hormuz, because it wasn't just the clear, obvious product of oil and its the fuels. It was that, if you guys did not know, the petrochemicals industry, specifically there in that Strait of Hormuz, they produce some of the world's largest fertilizers. Oh, okay. They've got some of the world's largest fertilizer producing nations in that little neighborhood of the Strait of Hormuz. Or should I rather call it the Hormuz neighborhood? Did you guys know this? Did you guys know this? Because India is dependent upon the fertilizer they apparently get from that neighborhood. A country like Australia is dependent upon it for fuel, obviously, but they've also got a great agricultural production hub. Obviously, a country like Brazil, if you're talking about Brazil produces for its needs. Brazil has oil for itself, so Brazil can endeavor in its own particular petrochemicals industry for its own particular agricultural sector. That the neighborhood of Hormuz also facilitates for the petrol of most of North Africa, as well as also for us included, since we also get it from that neighborhood. We were almost given that unclear response by the current minister of Industries, Mines and Energy, who said it seems like our fuel does come from there and other particular countries around the world. And you're like, it's either you know where our fuel actually comes from or you don't. But don't give us a half-baked answer that doesn't actually say, are we exposed to Hormuz or not? Because the minister still has to answer that question, even though he'll probably not answer it. But this is what we see. Because what's that thing's name? The Dowries Green Hydrogen Village itself is obviously already in the fertilizer industry. And it's already producing, according to their particular lead executive, producing, some great results. Then you've got farming and food, which obviously is connected to the fertilizer industry greatly, because it's about securing the food, what they call it, the food security component that Namibia is obviously now chasing, even though we've identified that Namibia's food security is actually dependent upon access to money and access to shopping facilities, which basically means if you want to make sure that people can actually eat, it's not about having as regular government food programs for delivery. It's about making sure that people have access to the money. But that's another dimension, another discussion completely by itself. The next particular industry, obviously, that would be impacted would be mining. Mining still has to identify its particular role in this. You know, would they actually decarbonize completely their entire outfits, their entire processes, their entire setups? You've got the chemicals industry, obviously, looking at cosmetics and pharmaceuticals completely. And then, because perfumes also form part of the pharmaceuticals, if you guys didn't know. Perfumes and cosmetics, the makeup and all that, they form part of the... Okay, pharmaceutical is what you consume, but the cosmetics also, they come from the same manufacturing scope of things. And then finally, there's aviation and shipping, with that obviously being the next particular sectors that can be impacted. So there are 2, 4, 6, 8 direct sectors. 8 direct sectors that Namibia stands the opportunity of grasping like this. And we need Namibians for each one of them. Aviation and shipping is not just about having a captain for the ship or having a pilot for the plane. I'm talking about the technicians that would need to be trained for that. Are we building the ships? Because definitely we would need to start building the ships with these particular engines to champion and to pioneer green shipping, as the International Maritime Organization has been outlining. And then secondly, what would green aviation look like? That would be an interesting talking point to start from. Possibly it would actually be the particular sort of like stimulating factor for Minister Vaikuna Kundi's plan to resuscitate a national airline, if the fleet of planes actually run on a green fuel like green hydrogen. So I position to you these particular aspects. Now, the hydrogen monitor, obviously, of IPPR looked at skills on a very micro level. They looked at skills and the communities that live around the proposed and current developing projects in the parts of Namibia of the Karas region and obviously in the Rongo region. Now, I want you, as a fellow Namibian, on this day specifically, which is Africa Day, to envisage a future without the petrol price, without having to be exposed to the idiocy of, for example, American presidents like Donald Trump. Well, it was not just Donald Trump. There was also George W. Bush, who also impacted the petrol price back in the 2000s, specifically from 2000 to 2003, obviously after the invasion of Iraq, because he also didn't think things through. Barack Obama, Syria, which is also a major oil-producing country, Libya, also a major oil-producing country, which in my perspective, in my opinion, it basically looks like an attack on OPEC in order to do something. Now, the doing something is the unclear indicator. Does this mean America, which is also an oil-producing country, wishes to undermine OPEC, which basically protects the US dollar, the petrodollar? Or is it a discussion of just, you know, basically knocking over the largest oil-producing nations from OPEC into some or other kind of a subservient state or, you know, subjugated state, them being subjugated to the United States, which now also includes Venezuela, because the aim, how many strategists, political strategists are looking at this, and this is for many of you Namibians that have a very soft heart for specifically for Cuba, I've got to give you this warning as well. Apparently the aim was to attack Venezuela so as to create a crisis within Cuba. I'll say it again. Attacking Venezuela to create a crisis in Cuba, basically to attack Cuba next. Let that sink in. And now remember, Cuba is a great ally of Namibia. International relations would become our most tested particular subject in the coming months regarding the fate of Cuba. Cuba needs fuel. They need fuel for their own particular industries and the likes. The core concern, obviously, is there are proponents in the U.S. government and in the U.S., if I can call them sort of like in the lobby groups, specifically Cuban-American proponents who want to see regime change, who want to see the government of Cuba overthrown. So, in the next few months, if things don't go as planned for the Republicans in the United States, we potentially could have another distraction exercise taking place. And this particular next fated victim of the United States would be Cuba. Now, even though I started off on the power to X and the discussions, obviously, of skills for Namibia's green industries, that's now the new label we have to work with. I agree with the label because they're all green. They have a similarity between each other. And, oh yes, I forgot to let you guys know. You can call through at 083-288-401. Let's have a listen specifically on the skills shortages, the skills gap, the skill supply, the necessary needed skills to participate in the sector. Because the way things are going, I am literally hoping that we are ramping up everything regarding green hydrogen in order to achieve the green fuels, in order to drive the green energy, the green energy powered engines of the future by next year, 2027. I am sick and tired of, literally, I'm sick and tired of Donald Trump causing chaos in the global oil markets. I'm sick and tired. I don't know how you guys feel, because we can all lay the blame specifically and squarely on Donald Trump. He's not creating any relief for any of us. It's as if he's declared a war on the world. I don't know what I've done to Donald Trump. I actually don't care, but I do care about my pocket, and I do care about the fuel price. And I know you care about the fuel price, and there's nothing our government can do to the United States, specifically, basically, by only calling, the ambassador here, who loves gallivanting across Namibia and only looking at American interests in Namibia. Well, basically, that's what ambassadors do, basically. So, the only thing they can do is just call him for an audience and ask him, hello, listen, what's your president up to? What new harebrained project is he probably cooking up right now? Because it is really inconveniencing you and me. Don't worry, guys. Don't worry. I mean, there's another war on the horizon later this year. If you think things are done, there's another war on the horizon not far away. And if you think things are done with Iran, they're not done. They are not done. I'll tell you today, they are not done. Even though it seems like there's a tentative, whatever agreement that is now currently being signed, that is supposedly being negotiated since Friday up until now, because it still doesn't make sense. I still don't trust the Americans, and I also don't trust the Israelis, because something will pop off which will impact the petrol price, which will impact the affordability scheme or the affordability range in the Namibian supermarkets, retail sector, you name it. You name it. There's just no way you can run away from this. This is the only time when international relations technically is a bad story. The only time. So, the outgoing message, or the theme during the course of this morning's session of the Unpacking the Day is, we really need the green hydrogen sector to kick into gear, to start delivering, to start doing its particular part by literally end of this year, December 2026. Because I really want to see the Toyota Mirai. I really want to see the various other particular hydrogen-powered cars popping up and, dominating our roads. It won't be electric vehicles, electric vehicles look attractive because they're the next easiest thing to get your hands on. But then when you realize you can't charge almost everywhere. Yes, and even though that lovely article that we wrote 2 years back, was it last year or the year before? About the charging points at some of the malls here in Windhoek. But go and ask yourself how many of the other malls across the country have the same particular initiative towards a new green demand. We very quickly forget how expensive electricity production can become. Very quickly. Even though there is the developments, obviously, of the independent power producers who were mostly solar, them trying to play their part, but the concern has been that the independent power producers want to sell to SADC Power Pool. They don't care about you and me and our needs here in Namibia. They want to sell into SADC Power Pool. No, really, guys. They want to sell there. They don't want to sell here, because they know if they sell here, they would have to charge a Namibian dollar price. They want to sell there. Now, where have I heard a similar kind of a... It's not a harebrained strategy. It's a purely commercial strategy. A political, nonsensical strategy is a harebrained strategy. Let me also just be clear there. A commercial strategy is one where... Do you want a lower price or do you want that higher price over there? And any person's person will tell you, I want that higher price. If I already have the product and I can supply the product, I want that price. I want that price. I want to sell into the SADC power pool. Which is the same particular thing specifically with the Nigerian government. They obviously have the right to take the oil they've got and put the oil on a global benchmarked price, which is the price per barrel globally. The Brent crude, not the other crude price. The Brent crude, which is the other global standard. The other one is the American standard. Is the Americans' barrel per price, price per barrel standard for the internal American oil market. So over here, specifically for the rest of us, we have to look at the Brent crude standard. And the Brent crude standard is what poor Ali Dangote's Dangote refinery has to buy a price at. He has to buy it at the government price, which is a price coming from OPEC. Now look at that ridiculousness. The oil field is right across the street from Dangote. I'm assuming it's geographically right across the street, but it's still in the same country. It's right across the street from the Dangote for refinery. Yet the Dangote refinery has to buy at a US dollar international rate in order to refine. So it still does not lessen the pressure specifically on the local economy of Nigeria. And the Nigerians know this. They know it's an ironclad document specifically that since their government, since their country is part of the OPEC cluster of countries, it's an ironclad agreement. They can't do anything. Angola is also in OPEC. Angola has a fuel levy for Angolans. A fuel subsidy for Angolans. It's a subsidization on the price. It's the same thing that Namibia also has here. It's the energy fund, whatever. But it's the particular fund that it absorbs certain, it acts like an incentive, basically. But the overall, to me, how it sounds like, when you hear the ministers always speak about that fund, is it sounds like, or when the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy brings out a statement regarding the next fuel price increase, or whether the price stays the same, is that how it sounds every time to me is that this fund acts as a revenue generator for the government and not as an actual subsidy mechanism for you and me. And don't worry, guys. I'm showing you the particular pitfalls of the fossil fuel sector, which in many cases, I'm highlighting to you all the bad things. All the bad things. I don't care. I'm going wild on this particular sector because they're all bad. They're all bad. And even yesterday morning, specifically when we had the discussion here on my Sunday morning take about where have we actually used petroleum before? Well, if petroleum and coffee and tea at one stage and sugar at another stage and salt and other spices, other commodities at other stages have become, I'll call them toxic commodities because the moment another country hates or starts hating your country for producing and supplying said particular product to the world, your country can get embargoed and the same particular product can also get embargoed in the same vein. Thus creating greater economic uncertainty within your country. We've seen what happens to Zimbabwe with just farming legislation and a farming policy, which obviously was greatly fueled by political greed. And the particular indications from this is a discussion of how do we actually view the way forward being What do you want to achieve from your particular developments of industrial development in your country? Or are we looking at a scenario of, hey, how about we follow the next best thing? The next best thing primarily being a development such as moving away from fossil fuels. Moving away from fossil fuels. Now I know, for those of us that are in the transport sector, this probably doesn't sound like something good to hear, specifically from possibly your favorite radio station, that being Eagle FM, on a Monday morning known as Africa Day, where I just told you guys at the start of the show, be proud of who you are. Just be proud of who you are. Be proud of the developments maybe you achieved, your family has achieved, that your nation has achieved. Be proud. And in the same vein, I'm telling you, oil is rubbish. Because oil is rubbish. Oil is dirty. Oil, besides the obvious environmental threats, oil is bad business. Oil is bad business. We've shown how diamonds can be bad business. And that's obviously the particular indicators back in the 90s and early 2000s where it was the blood diamonds discussion. But oil is bad business. Oil is bad business, guys. We are dragging our feet specifically in getting the laws in order, because I'm still interrogating the caliber of parliamentarians that we have in parliament. Because if we can get past the ridiculousness of certain politicians who are out there specifically in the National Assembly to go and talk other things, to go and target and talk other things instead of putting forward actual motions. For example, what's the thing's name? That standing committee of economy and industry and public affairs that had the hearing with the Minister of Finance, Minister Shafuda, and the Bank of Namibia and the Namfisa guys. And then the Ministry of Justice's Law Reform Department that showed up and also possibly gave the best presentation I've ever, ever enjoyed. Because the moment I start enjoying a presentation is the moment that you know I'm liking what the person is presenting. So it was a unique take specifically for the Ministry of Justice to present an economic perspective from what they've seen and the laws and how these laws particularly play a role in this economic perspective. Clearly, the MPs on that standing committee, they obviously had their eyes opened for them. But philosophically, the perspective that they came from about whether or not the laws actually really do protect people, it's not about the laws. It's not about the laws. It's about the agencies, the SOEs. We proved to you here on the home run, specifically with the Ombudsman's report about the recruitment process of NAMRA, that the executives of a state-owned entity don't know the powers that they should and do not have. They don't know it. They don't read. We proved it to you right here. Right here. We proved it to you. It was technically not our work, but it was the Ombudsman's work. And like we said back then, we're hoping that the Ombudsman actually does more of this kind of work. Even though it sounds like his office is a little bit reactionary, but they've got to do more of this kind of work. Getting into the discussions in terms of legality of certain decisions and how these particular decisions are interpreted, for example, by enterprises of the government, local authorities of the government, regional authorities of the government, and whether or not they actually know their particular responsibilities, their roles, and their ability to function under these set laws. For example, I'll show you a basic test I did. It was an article of back in last month regarding the revamping of the was the economic rules and the metering, the pricing and metering that the ECB had engaged, had begun basically since last year, December, into this year, regarding, you know, updating this specific strategic legal document that sets the prices, that sets legal rules for participants to in the energy, specifically in the electricity supply and the electricity consumption realms of Namibia's economy. And there were pertinent questions that I could not ask directly to the presenter, who was a consultant that was hired. But I had the opportunity of writing the email to the ECB directly for them to answer it, since it was their workshop and they hired the consultants to come and present on the subject matter. Because no one in the hall of the stakeholders, the interested parties, were asking these pertinent questions. Pertinent questions about, are we going to move away from a template, for example, of whereby your property can be confiscated by the local authority if you cannot pay your water and electricity bill anymore? Now, supposedly, there's a piece of law that the former Justice Minister, Yvonne Dausap, had introduced, the whereby your property should no longer be floated as a recoverable asset in order to recover said particular monies. But it clearly brings into conflict what I asked, and which was responded to by the Chief Executive, Mr. Kayemise, because he responded to each of the questions, and versus that piece of legislation, for example. And I asked questions about how does it impact the Local Authorities Act as well? How does it impact specifically the role of the local authorities in this? Because it seems like it's a piece of legislation emanating through from the ECB that is basically just, it's not to say that it's bad, because there is no indication to say that it's bad. It is specifically commercial rules given or handed to local authorities without local authorities actually understanding that they have commercial interests at heart and a commercial role also to play in the Namibian economy. And it's one of the reasons, it's my bane. It's actually my crusade. It's one of the reasons why I am greatly disappointed with local authorities, because they don't understand the crucial role they play in Namibia's development agenda. For many of you, I'm actually going to start telling many of you, stop running to ministers. Stop running to ministers. Because ministers know how long that communication, that line of communication is to where you are based. The people who need to act on behalf of you is in your local authority. If you're in a region, it's also your regional authority. They need to act. These people need to start having customer service lines for impacted peoples, for communities who feel that service delivery is not happening. They need to start reporting these particular things. Why is it that a corporate company has a customer service line based in Windhoek? And if you are drinking a fault, if you are using their product and the product is faulty, let's for example say in Enana, the people in Enana can look at the product that the person consumed, see that there's a customer contact line, and call the telephone. If there was a need for employment creation, it was the local authorities who have to do this. And yes, Minister Sankwasa, this actually translates to you approving more budgets. Bigger budgets for these local authorities. Because technically, call centers are needed. Call centers are needed. call centers are crucial. Not AI, not the latest developments in AI. No one cares. Call centers are needed. Call centers will help people on the ground, communities on the ground, recognize that they spoke to someone and that they were heard. They don't want to run to us, the media, because they know they are just elongating their complaint situation. And that they probably know that no local councillor, no local representative or office worker from the local authority will respond to a journalist who's busy inquiring about certain particular services, or the lack of service delivery, or the lack of response in the need of a crisis. They know it. But yeah, I obviously meandered down a river with my little canoe. Coming back to my starting point, which is obviously always looking at the skills gaps. In some cases, hiring just 3 people for a call center at a local authority is all that's needed. Is all that's needed. It'll also be the best way in terms of which, by which ACC can actually get to grasp with the level of corruption taking place, or the level of lack of serverless delivery. Because the rate at which ACC is going today, I mean, hey man, they're outperforming themselves a bit late, but yeah. Don't worry, ACC, it's not a congratulatory message. It's my most docile form of sarcasm that because I'm holding back on the sarcasm, because I don't want to say the other words specifically of you guys have not been useful probably for a great part of 10 years, but now, you know, a hesitant thumbs up. We obviously also have to look into the aspect specifically. This is now heading into the second half of this morning's program. We'll just be taking a quick break after this last comment. But we'll also be having a look specifically at, okay, before I take the break, let me first get the caller's contribution coming through. Eagle FM, good morning.
Oh, morning, good.
How are you doing, Angabona?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, Angabona.
It's a chilly morning.
Yes, it is. And I'm very fearful of what will happen next week, Monday morning, when we're in the 1st of June or the 2nd of June.
Ha! Telling you, my friend. So, me, I'm trying to adapt to the cold weather. I never used to like it. But people say it's very healthy, it's what.
I actually like Namibia's weather, Angabona. I have experienced snow and I hate snow. So yeah. I like Namibia's weather. Today I'm a super proud Namibian and African. So I'll say I like Africa's geography and I like Namibia's weather. I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
They sound like I.
I will not trade this country for anything else, Angabona. I have experienced snow, sleet, cold winds, and I didn't like it.
That's why we must simply guide our values and the stabilities and all this peace and things like coexistence, you know, this social coexistence.
Yeah,
we shouldn't be like today. You say like this, like you mentioned about Trump, and I've been following him. Mentioned this one this tomorrow is the contradiction.
Mm.
So this is what I do really not understand. But I did not get what you said, that is there a new agreement or is there the old one, that the ceasefire that we...
Angabona, it seems like the ceasefire, they now want to achieve some sort of a peace deal out of the ceasefire. But knowing Trump will say one thing, like he's been saying apparently since last night into now. He's saying one thing, and then something happens. Something happens, and then what he said yesterday supposedly is now a lie, which technically, for any sane and logical thinking person, would say, so you lied yesterday, and now you're saying something completely different.
Yeah.
And in many cases, Uncle Bona, I try to be reserved, specifically with global political leaders, because in many cases, Namibia has direct relations with them. And I know, for example, like us, Eagle FM, we are, with our application and our website, we are being listened everywhere across the world.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So,
but we are not defending anybody. I'm just telling you, you know, even people, them, the journalists, I see them asking, oh, Mr. President, you say this one, and they say, ah, this one is the...
Yeah, and he tries to tell them that they lied. He tries to tell them that they are apparently putting words in his mouth, like the one particular engagement. And you go like, you just said these things yesterday. How are you changing your tune today when they're asking you, you said this yesterday, what's happening today?
Maybe it's a chameleon.
He is a chameleon, entrepreneur.
Yeah, that. So now, let me come to our story of capacities and issues of that nature.
Mm.
I think many a time, sometimes we create this inability to deal with, to solve our own problems.
Yeah.
For example, when you follow, sometimes I follow the writings of Mr. Namanji, Leah Namanji, Mr. Namanji.
Mm.
And many, the current issue that we were talking about recently, it has to do with our constitutionally protected rights and freedom, you know, all these fundamental human rights.
Mm.
So we also have our own customary values protected.
Mm.
Under those constitutional provision and those statutories. But when you look at many, many issues, and when you look at cases, whether criminal cases, those civil cases, and all these others, they are majorly pending, especially when you look at issues of disputes arising from a lot of issues.
Yeah.
The clash between customary laws and civil, say, for example, civil marriage.
Mm.
Like Sister Namanji just, you know, looking at the article that he put in the newspaper of last week, Friday, actually.
Mm.
And you discover that in many ish areas, we say we do not have capacity. But we may have the capacity to resolve problems that we are actually creating ourselves. Say, for example, I was giving an example that is narrated there, like civil marriage and customary marriage.
Yeah.
If you are in a marriage, for example, now, with your wife, civil marriage, which is also part of our, their values, everything is similar to, almost similar to our customary marriage, for example. But in the civil marriage, you have one wife, one woman.
Mm.
So if you want to marry another woman, if you want to get married to another woman, that first marriage has to be dissolved, isn't it?
That is true.
And if it's not dissolved, and you go and get married again, you'll be arrested.
Mm.
But now, what about this multiple relationship that we have? That, let's say, customary marriage.
Mm.
And according to Namanje, he's saying that men continue to experience those kind of risks, persecuted and things like that. And he's calling the scene of what the crime of, is it Bigan or Bagan? Bigan.
Hmm?
Do you know that word?
Bigan.
So, but
no,
now...
No, Agabona, you have to help me. I don't want to use words again, which I don't know the meanings for.
Check it, boss. Check it today. Check the meaning there.
No, but you have to spell it for me. You have to spell it for me. How do I spell
B-I-
it?
B-I-G-A-M-Y.
B-I-G-A-N-Y.
M-M-M-Y.
Bigamy.
Yeah, bigamy.
M-Y.
Bigamy. A sin of bigamy.
The offense of marrying someone while already married to another person. Yeah. Uh-huh. Wow, look at
this
that.
Much- If it's not in your annual, if it's not dissolved or annulled, then that means you'll be arrested. And many people are arrested. Many, you have heard a lot of people are arrested because of that thing.
But
the cases are pending.
And that is true, Angabona. Do you know why, Angabona? Because there are like legal registration processes, the ones from the government side. They are legal ones. And then there's the other registration processes, if we call them like identity registration. For example, the wife now has to work with a new name. She has to now use the husband's surname, depending on the arrangement, obviously. And then there's also the children born from these unions. Now, I don't know why we're not explaining it like this in the broader cultural discussions of Namibia. By saying, hey, listen, guys, look, we can understand if there is children outside of wedlock. That we understand. But if you are married here, if you are married here and you want to go marry there, please do know that two people will be arrested here. Out of the three.
Those ones that you have mentioned about children, illegitimate children and all this, those ones are done away with. The law has changed.
Yeah.
Even the one for a woman to assume the man's
surname
and whatever.
Yes.
That one is no longer an issue.
But you also know, Angabona, you know that there are conservative, you know that there are conservative communities still in Namibia who still frown upon, you know, children out of wedlock and all those particular things.
So much. These are some of the insights that children have ensured. So, or especially in our culture, I think in many culture, in your Shwambo, many things, those children who were born by unmarried with parents.
Yeah.
And then, I remember many years ago that Jerry Akanja, Honorable Jerry Akanja, I think he first tabled it in the parliament, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
That children should not be called illegitimate children. And they couldn't inherit, they couldn't do a lot of things, and this still practice is still happening, like you are saying.
Yeah.
So it's an insult, it's a derogative kind of remark, it's not permissible, and this is exactly what Sisana Manje is saying here, that we are still experiencing those kind of things. Although in the context of the lack of capacity that we have, this is one of a good example where we have our customer values or rights which are protected under the Constitution that are still, many people are still experiencing this kind of problem. So now, maybe since you still have a lot of things, I don't know what were the main concern of your discussion today, because I was going to raise this point with David, but we didn't have I did not go through.
Yeah.
So because this is exactly what you was mentioning, but it's good that you have extended it now to those children, how we really value things. And maybe we need to really seriously reform, especially this for that Sisana Manje there. It's very hurting. So because lesson three, we had the presentation where people were talking about if you marry this person and you have not nullified,
you're right. Nullified.
The first marriage, then you are actually standing a risk of being persecuted, arrested. You're not even been given bail, like this. You know the article here that I'm looking at. The unnecessary arrest, denial of bail, and enforcement of the crime of, how do you pronounce this word?
Bigamy.
Bigam.
Bigamy.
Bigamy.
Yeah.
Bigamy.
Say it like polygamy, monogamy, or even like bigotry, Angabona. Just say bigamy. You just
yes.
flow with it.
Bigotry.
No, bigamy.
Oh.
Not bigotry. Bigamy. In our context, we're talking about bigamy. Bigotry is someone that, you know, like racists, or they are people that discriminate. You call them bigots. That's a bigot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People that have discriminatory tendencies, you call them a bigot.
Bigots.
Yeah.
So that one is a crime in Namibia?
Yeah.
So, but this exactly one that you have just pronounced correctly here, bigamy. So all those things are issue to be dealt with, to be done away with.
Yeah.
So if you see people calling children illegitimate and things like that, please tell them that that one is
but Angabona, you also, you and Mr. Namanje are making a very good case. What's the book that he wrote, Angabona? Is the one that is the one that he brought out recently?
So this one is just an article in the newspaper.
Okay.
Because he does write a lot of things. This one was on the page 10
yeah.
of the Namibian. So dated 22nd May 2006.
Where he speaks about bigamy, basically.
Yeah, where he now speaks about this thing.
He's making a good case about the Angabona, because it's literally, if we look at it, the broader scheme of what I also started on, you know, how we need to actually adopt these green fuels quicker than oil, because oil is becoming a politically sabotageable product and a commodity. He's talking about the evolutions of society, the changing features. And the unfortunate thing is, society is now welcome with, you know, with what was an illegitimate child or a child out of wedlock is now, it's a run-of-the-mill thing. It's as basic as a human breathing oxygen.
My brother. There is a lot. So, as you said, we must be proud, more patriotic of our country.
Yeah.
So that at least to do away with all those kind of things that are really infringing on the rights of the people. Obviously, we are not saying that we just have to draw a line there to know our obligation towards our rights and all these other things that are protected by the Constitution.
Yeah.
Many a times we really, for him, I'm very happy that he's bringing this kind of points, but these are cases that are so many within our society, our community there. So issues of this nature, people are not aware. And of course, we do not also have the knowledge of the structure to follow. But many people, and you know, women are suffering also of these things. And we are saying that men are there. Are you not the one who says it's men who are going to the war, who are dying, and also because of the social problems, and the women are plenty there, outside there, and they want also to produce children.
Well,
how will you distribute, have an equitable distribution of men and women?
Angabona, this is not an emergency food relief that needs to be equitably distributed. No, Angabona. Okay, I for now I can't remember if I said that, but there are good points that you're highlighting there. The concern is obviously, if we have to look at the future of humanity, I've watched now so many particular presentations and discussions regarding where we are going as humanity. Uncle Bona, I don't know.
Well, because we are afraid that we are going to be arrested and persecuted.
Not just that. Not just that. Yeah, Uncle, it's also a thing of how our societies learn to adapt and to evolve, Uncle Bona. Just last week, which I'm technically agreeing to what I said also last week, like Friday. Remember when I said there are certain towns in Namibia which are boiling under the surface, and we don't see this specifically, like myself being in Windhoek, we don't see these potential social evils and the social evils are already there, like drug abuse, alcohol abuse, overall violence and violent attacks in society, the lack of the presence of the police to actually police in the society, and the lack of the, if I can rather just say, the community leaders to basically try to develop a society for the future. The concern from such things is, Uncle Bona, there are solutions for each one of those things that I mentioned. There are solutions. The concern is what the individual, the let's say that young man who decides to go and use a drug substance, it's the decision that person makes to use that thing instead of converting, telling their mind, let me do something positive. Let me go and clean the yard, or let me pick up a book. Since I'm struggling to read, let me pick up a book and I try to read. It's the old saying that my mom even used to tell us, you can bring that horse to the water hole, to the water to drink. If that horse doesn't drink, there's nothing you can do. But the farmers discovered a way. They brought the salt rock, the rock salt or the salt rock, and then they put the salt rock right next to the water hole, and they tell the animal, lick the salt, and then you drink the water. So you can have incentives as well.
Yes, you know, the reason why I brought this point is just that now you are saying that there are so many, we have a lot of solution to many, many problems that are facing us.
Yeah.
It's because Tatekwezi brought a very important discussion.
Yeah.
They were talking about Maongo, they were talking about value additions. You're talking about a lot of things that we can really solve through with our own cultural knowledge in cooperation with integrated with this modern knowledge that we are having now, so that we can really solve our problem. But the issue that I'm seeing here is that we are failing to really look at our own way of doing things. We have got rules, regulations, those customary rules that have been there. So they are not the common laws and all these other things that we have, like the civil marriage, for example.
Yeah.
They are not, shouldn't be so superior to our own customary values and norms.
Yep.
So they should all be serving the same purpose, the laws, how the purpose of the law is to serve the society, to protect the individual. So now, if, for example, we are somehow discriminating, or maybe we are not only adhering to our own value, let's say multiple relationship. I know it's a complex issue, but this is how it was done also. People were having this, if you are to marry in a customary marriage.
Yeah.
So you have how many multiple spouses, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or wives.
Yeah.
So maybe the issue of now the women having multiple things, this is another topic of another day. But I don't know. This is just how people are now suffering with those kind of concepts, of those kind of practice.
The greater underlying concept there, Uncle Bona, with what you're highlighting, it is a legitimate thing, Uncle Bona, because like I started at the start, obviously of Africa Day celebration, we have to take pride in who we are. And much of the influences on the modern African societies, let me also come down a little bit more micro on the modern Namibian society, is that we have a great deal, unfortunately, of religious influence, which is not native to Africa. We have to identify Christianity is not native to Africa. Even Islam is not native to Africa. And their norms of what they impose on what is a family or a household is what is economically now being measured by the NSA. So, a man and a woman, how many children? Or is there a mother or a father that's the household leader? How many children?
Yeah.
So if they come and find that it's now Dwight and three women that he's dating at the same time, who are all having children from the same man in the same house, then, you know, they would frown because they would say, but isn't this a little bit too crowded and too cramped situation?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Angabona, you're making a good point. I'm looking at it from the institutions in place.
It's fine. Let me hear more because there was a gap.
Yeah.
That's why I did not even comment about Africa. But we must be proud of Africa because we have got so much to give to ourselves and to the world. So the emerging population, young population, and all these things. So we have got a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of money, in terms of human, in terms of whatever. So let's utilize the space that we have and also accommodate each other. Obviously, the laws must take its course. We follow those things to regulate our movements, our relationship. So I don't think we seriously need to have a lot of these civil wars, this kind of unrest. And this will hinder our development, our real development.
No, it definitely will.
So maybe we just have to salute our heroes. And they have some kind of a united voice. Yesterday, we were talking about fragmentation of voices. As I went to want to present our own issues, our want to bargain for our own bigger stake. So, in our, to our, for, in our, from our resources. So, let's unite and then we get to it done and then let's prosper, my friend. We shouldn't be having much of this unemployment and all these things. We have got solutions. But some of these problems are caused because we are saying that we are not recognizing and valuing our own customary norms and the rules. So thank you very much.
Not a problem, Angabona. Thanks for coming through.
Good. Cool.
Now, on that note, dear listeners, we're going to take a short break. We come back right after this, and we head into the last quarter of this morning's session of the Unpacking the Day on this somewhat chilly but lovely Africa Day. Hope you've also enjoying the rest of your Africa Day Monday morning in our company. And obviously, if you're listening to us, I do hope that you've got something warm in your hands, like a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or whatever your particular poison might be. On that note, we'll be back right after this.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo teto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune ujo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora esatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko derewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM VI.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye. Now coming back from the quick break right there, and obviously where we actually started from for this morning is looking at the green industries of Namibia, the latest label that I actually agree with in terms of its particular usage, and the volatility of the fossil fuel sector that is just not providing any particular relief to any of us anyway. I stated that way with that particular tone, with that particular selection of words, primarily because these are all facts. These are facts that shout louder than any particular, louder than the Comus Mountains, or the Awas Mountains around us, or the Comus Highlands that we are based on, which is Windhoek. It shouts louder than the sun that you will obviously be enjoying on this chilly morning, specifically as you are probably listening to us, wherever you find yourself across the country, while you've got your cup of coffee or cup of tea in your hand. I have to highlight these realities because this reality is not going to bring forth any promising situation. Because currently there's a world superpower that does not care about the price of bread for you, but the price of your favorite maize meal, does not care about the affordability or the living costs. The cost of living, they don't care. They don't care about the impacts, specifically whether or not you will be able to have a job today or tomorrow. They just don't care. And this specifically is squarely from a country who was at one stage championing what they called the rules-based system, which technically translated towards the rules set forth by the advanced and developed economies of the world. And I'm talking about predominantly the NATO cluster of countries and the rest of us. Now, that geopolitical depiction right there should tell a country like Namibia, listen up, speed up, specifically the developments in the green energy, in the green industries sectors. Because the skills gap, yes, the Green Hydrogen Monitor of IBPR obviously identifies the most important commodity that would be needed in any particular industry or sector or commercial activity and endeavor across the world is skilled humans. And skilled Namibians is a deficiency that we suffer from specifically to participate in the sector. So this technically means that we've got to work hard to get those Namibians transitioned into this sector, because we can make so much more as Namibia. We are on the cusp of being literally industrialized if the power to X principle is achieved. I'll say it again. If the power to X principle is achieved, I've moved away from the production of green hydrogen. It's going to happen. It is happening. What I want to see is the power to X principle. The power to X principle. Guys, I'll be honest with you. I really want to switch off the noise that comes from the oil and gas conferences across this country.
because they're not delivering anything concrete. And just like yesterday when I've explained to you about the stories that I've heard, that we have heard of oil seepage, that is literally the closest where you can get to where oil is literally seeping out into onto the surface, onto the surface of the earth. There have been such instances in the south of Namibia. It would have been easier to actually explore and prospect and develop there and then pay the landowner who owns that piece of land than the gallivanting that's taking place 300 kilometers away from our coastline across from Lüderitz. It's the only time I'm referencing a movie, which is technically a TV series, Landman, if you've never seen it. It stars Billy Bob Thornton. He's the ex-husband of Angelina Jolie. Well, Angelina Jolie probably has, well, she technically has three ex-husbands. The last one obviously being Brad Pitt. So it's Brad Pitt and Billy Bob Thornton. And then it was Tommy Lee Jones. No, not Tommy Lee Jones. What's the guy's name? The British actor. But anyway, that guy. Who played in Trainspotting 1 and 2. But anyway, so Billy Bob Thornton plays a landowner in Texas. And he makes a very valuable point to Andy Garcia's character regarding oil exploration. Where he told Andy Garcia's character about, listen, why are you wasting your time with the unnecessary legal and environmental compliance aspects that you've got to meet from the government to do deep sea oil exploration and extraction, whereas I've got clearance to put up oil rigs for the rest of the lifespan that I live on the surface of the country, and it can take within a year for all clearances and compliance measures to be met. I'll let it sink in, guys. Do you know why I'm saying that? The South Africans were exploring for oil onshore in South Africa. Not the Shell exploration that stopped and then Shell withdrew the exploration activities out of South Africa. I'm talking about the exploration activities that were taking place here in the north, in the North Cape of South Africa. This province that my father's from, across the river. It was taking place there. Just think about it. I'll let it sink in. But it seems like we're not interested in that particular part because we don't want to enrich Namibians. Who already own land, we wish to enrich foreign corporations for no reason. We want them to spend their money for no reason without potentially achieving any results because we still don't know. All we're getting is question marks and more question marks and question marks and question marks that don't mean anything. Qatar is throwing its particular insurance money behind these exploration activities, and I'll tell you now, guys, if something just takes too long to get to a concrete response of any kind, yeah, then there's something wrong. Then there is something wrong. No, guys, just let you know. Something is just not clear about the oil exploration with us. And it's not from us, the Namibian side of things. It's the corporates who are exploring. It's the corporates. There's something they're not saying, and it's not being said. It's either the price will be too expensive if that oil is pumped, or something is wrong with the geography. Meaning, Namibia has not had a significant amount of earthquakes, except for the few earthquakes here after COVID that, you know, occurred specifically only in the Kunene region. But Namibia hasn't had much tectonic or volcanic activity in order to show how, you know, that it's a volatile situation that we live in, specifically geographically. No. This place of Southwest Africa has been as stable as time immemorial. It has been super stable. Now, the moment, if you go talk to a geologist, for those of you that know a geologist close at hand, the moment you go talk to a geologist and you ask them, what's going on here? Why? What's up with Namibia's geography? They will tell you this country is super old. We've got the oldest desert in the world. It's the smallest, but it's the oldest. It's super old. Which should describe something else. Being a country as old as we are, not the political side of Namibia, the actual terrain, the geography of Namibia. Being as old as we are, there are unique things to us, which are unique characteristics that only we can occupy or we can own. But it also describes a setting of, this means that certain particular extractive sectors just won't work for Namibia, and others will. So, leaving you with that little bit of a, you know, a nugget of contemplation right there, sit there in your mind. Just go think about all the facts and all the noise and all the discussions and all the fanfare. Go look at it. Go think about it. And let that gut feeling. We all have a gut feeling, guys. This was explained to me by a sibling of mine in the realm of commercial activity and specifically around commercial governance, where it was explained to me, if that gut feeling is more responds first than your brain, you get a reaction first from your gut feeling, then from your brain, then your gut feeling is the one you follow. That obviously is pseudoscience, so it doesn't mean it's actually science that I'm espousing there with you, so please take it with a mountain of salt and a river of vinegar. But yeah, it's the only piece of wisdom I can share with you. On the side of knowledge, synthetic production is at our hands. If you told me 10 years ago 3D printing a house is a lie, or if you told me about 3D printing a house 3 years ago, I would have told you, you are lying. How big does that machine have to be to 3D print a house? Well, I've seen a 3D printed house in the United States, and I think in Australia is another one, and I think there's one in South Africa. It just looks weird, but I've seen a 3D printed house with half the construction workers on site. I've seen a Lego multi-story flat building be constructed. A modular home flat building. Literally a flat building. The size of Central Hospital. Multi-storied. Central Hospital size. The size of Central Hospital. Been made up of Lego blocks. Modular units. No 100 years of construction. No massive budgets for that facility. No. It's all prepared
in a factory, literally a factory, and it's shipped to the site and it's assembled together. If you told me this 10 years ago, I would have told you it's a lie. But then I've also realized YouTube is the most underestimated resource of knowledge that I've ever come across. I don't need a TV subscription. I just need to pay for my internet every month. I don't need a TV subscription. And I don't need to be at the behest or at the mercy of said particular pay-per-view TV provider, depending on what they want to give me, because sometimes some of the documentaries they used to give was just complete garbage, things that, you know, didn't entice you into being interested. But what I've learned from YouTube, guys, and the University of YouTube in the past 5 years since COVID, it has literally, my intellectual capacity has gone leaps and bounds, because they will mention a concept and I will go read about it. I'll even know more than what the person presenting in that documentary is talking about. Here in Namibia, I see many of the other journalists and media places are not talking about cost of living. I don't know if they are expressly ignoring cost of living. It's not like it's gone down. I still see indications primarily where, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but it's like we've gone quiet specifically in sort of like the, where do we find ourselves 5 years after, 6 years after COVID? We've not gone and looked at such analysis. With regarding to the green industries discussion, I see that there was a revised amount of the expected jobs to be created that was identified here. I just want to find, it said, did I close this thing? No, it's here. The expected jobs, for example, to be created by 2030 from the green industry, specifically the green hydrogen, about 30,000 jobs. There was an indication, if last time I checked, because I wrote that article, 200,000 jobs to 400,000 to be created. And obviously this was encompassing everything regarding the developments in green hydrogen, plus the affiliated activities to get the green hydrogen, industries up and running, those particular jobs around them, which would be all short-term jobs as well. And then the long-term jobs that would be envisaged that would balloon to the 400,000 quantity. And on top of this, specifically, we also have a concern as Namibia regarding what our actual education sector actually speaks to. Now, I have to slightly be a little bit unhappy with specifically with the perspective of the article that we had back on Friday, specifically being that we're talking about skills gaps, but it doesn't feed into, you know, the skills aspects. Like the list of what skills would be needed across the whole of the, not just green hydrogen, but the overall green industries and sectors. What skill shortages are there? Now, I'm using Green Industries, obviously the monitor that David attended, the monitor unveiling, is just for green hydrogen. But in the green industries, if you now have to sort of like, there are certain jobs that obviously would duplicate across multiple of these green sectors, like you would need a technician for solar panels, but there's solar panels being used in green hydrogen, solar panels potentially being used. No, there are solar panels in the Oshavela high iron
project. I haven't seen the aerial photo of the Taurus Green project, Green Hydrogen project, but I suspect there are also solar panels there. And in the independent power producers, you find solar panels also present because it's the most abundant resource in Namibia and it's right there. So cross-cutting across all four of them, you would find a solar energy or solar panel technician being the needed skill set across all of them. You get, for example, to the biomass discussion, which is the Power to X conference that I attended at UNAM. There you would find, for example, the need for supply of these encroacher bushes and the harvesting of these encroacher bushes. And the single most important thing would be how to adequately supply, because the presentations at that Power to X conference focused on the Oshikoto biomass power plant that NamPower is constructing, and the biomass industry, which is certified, as I discovered at the EU Namibia Business Forum, Namibia's biomass products, or the byproducts from the biomass industry, some of them are certified for export to the EU zone in terms of under the carbon border adjustment mechanism discussions. So there is a positive in terms of some of our sectors already subscribing, actively being accredited or being certified at a satisfactory level in terms of the labeling for export to the EU. At great length, the biggest fear obviously of CBAM has been answered greatly. If you guys don't know, is that the CBAM indicator highlights that the importing business that you are trading with as a Namibian, they will suffer the penalties in terms of, you know, penalty pricing for future imports from you. So that particularly means there will still be a mechanism in terms by which if you are producing a product that is exported to the EU that has a high or a large carbon footprint in terms of its overall production and making, the product will also be somehow there will be penalties cascading over to you in terms of complying to EU regulations for becoming carbon free. So, it is upon us as Namibians to actively start participating in this green industries and sector discussion. Even though greatly I am not yet fully, you know, satisfied with the question I have with which of the particular skills is it that we are lacking and that we actually need and that we actually need to be moving in towards. I downloaded a document just before I stepped in for this morning's particular session of the unpacking, looking at August 1, 2024 session of the Blueprint for Namibia's Green Industrialization. It's titled 2024. There was on page... What's this? What page is this? I think it's page 3. No, page 6. So page 6 of this document it's titled as Running Out of Steam, which goes by after a generation of rapid economic expansion, a growth gap with upper middle income peers has become entrenched. That's not what has happened to Namibia. Namibia has had to grow. There were certain things Namibia has had had to first sort of like deal with in between 1990 and, you know, up to a, you know, specific period after our independence. And this was a period up until 2015. No, actually 2005. The period was actually 2005. And what happened was there are countries that are considered to be our peers, middle income peers, our upper middle income peers. Remember, we were reclassified back in last year to being a lower middle income country. Whereas the classification that we were in, which was between 2015 to 2024, 25, is that we were an upper middle income country. And the divergence, meaning where we started trailing off as Namibia and where our peers started just continuing growing and just excelling, happened in 2005. I was literally 21. That was my year. I was 21 that year. I became 21 that year. It was literally in 2005 where this divergence happened. So Namibia has trailed off. Namibia has not had adequate growth and increase. What does this translate to specifically? Over this was an extended period of economic growth after 25 years of economic growth, averaging a remarkable 4.5% per annum for Namibia. This led to an achievement of upper middle income status. Now, this also translated to a return on capital accumulation started tapering off. Capital accumulation had driven growth primarily through public infrastructure and private mining investment, which is one of our biggest banes, is that it is focused only in certain sectors, the investment, but growth slowed since 2015. The economic growth model for Namibia is that the old growth model is running out of steam. This is the conclusion. The role of productivity and human capital in growth has been negligible, meaning this has been neglected for too long, and that public investment has crowded out private investment across the Namibian economy. Which is also one of the questions where I ask, and I asked this on the home run, not just last week, but also the week before, what is Namibia's true aim? Do we want to be a socialist country? Or are we striving for this hybrid that we are trying to, that looks similar to what the Scandinavian countries have, but it meets basically all the particular basic needs across the country? So what does this also translate to in terms of the growth constraints that Namibia suffers from, just in the last 5 minutes? So it was identified back in 2024 in this green industrialization blueprint by Namibia's green hydrogen program that there is an emerging consensus around the key development challenges that are holding back economic growth in the country, which is potential conditioned by 5 overarching circumstances. Low and declining productivity, human capital mismatches, meaning we are overproducing for certain things and we're not producing for certain things, meaning skills. There it is. There's the answer. Constrained markets, which is very exposed to external market swings from its main trading partners, South Africa, as well as also suppressed private opportunities, being declining investment and productivity in key sectors have restrained competitiveness. Thus, you don't see new products and services emerging. And also that state-owned enterprises remain dominant and have often stifled private opportunities. And finally, climate change threats. Water availability is central to sustaining the traditional economy and rapid urbanization. And the forecast increase in water scarcity represents a strategic challenge for Namibia. I did that in a minute. Wow, look at me, Dwight. Look at you, within a minute. So in a minute, in a nutshell, it answers, or it basically assists in answering some of the particular discussions. We are, once again, reminding you on this particular notion. We are on a ticking, it's not a ticking time bomb, but it's a ticking clock. I strongly advise any Namibian who's excited about the oil and gas, walk away. Just look the other way. Because the more something looks like cheerleading, the biggest activity is cheerleading, then actual results, walk away. Just walk away. Just say, until you show up, because no one is proving the baseline survey report wrong. No one is proving the report wrong. Which translates towards 2034 is the earliest you will see oil. I'll say it again. 2034 is the earliest you will see oil. No one is proving the, is proving that report wrong, in terms of its timeline. However, the green hydrogen, the green industries guys are going full steam ahead. We actually need to nurture this particular sector a lot more. We need to guide it. We need to put actually concerted government effort behind the green industries development, because they will generate more jobs quicker than the oil and gas guys. I'm really sorry. The oil and gas guys are not convincing enough. Up and until they step forward and actually come forward with a actionable strategy in terms of the jobs that they would need from Namibia's universities, from the broader Namibian economy. Sure. Until that time, don't hold your breath, because you'll only basically suffocate yourself for no reason. Enjoy the rest of your morning, guys, with the rest of our programming to follow on after the ad break. As well as also, remember to catch me and Helmut later on today, specifically on the Home Run, where we will be exploring, getting into a second half of this discussion. We're holding our turn. Obviously it'll be a surprise for the social media, posts that'll be developed. But catch us later on here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And this has been the Unpacking the Day here on your lovely Monday morning session, which is Africa Day. Please feel proud for being an African. Doesn't matter what your skin color is. Feel proud. If you were born in Namibia, if you were born in this continent, you're an African. Whether you be Asian, you've got European attributes, whether you were diluted many times through bloodline and whatever. I'm making it sound like a drinker pop. I'm sorry. But enjoy being an African. Really, today was the day to just... I don't know what happened. I woke up with so much positivity for some reason. But enjoy being an African. And we've got to trust in each other a lot more. On that note, enjoy the rest of your programming in our company. Here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. We'll see each other again, same time, same place, potentially tomorrow. But definitely the same time, same place at 4 o'clock later today.